The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Now, very happy to say we have Paul and Gary O'Donovan with us, Irish Olympic medalists. They are speaking to us as part of Team Visa in Ireland. Visa, the worldwide payment technology partner of the Olympic Games. They've announced their commitment to the 90-plus Team Visa athletes, offering them the opportunity to extend their relationship with Visa through to 2021. That includes Paul and Gary O'Donovan. Geez, lads, you must be rolling in cash, so are you?
Visa? They're very good. They've got contactless payments nowadays. It's great to be a part. No, in fairness to Visa, like they're great. The way they've put together this kind of pool of athletes from all over the world that are heading towards the Tokyo Olympics, and we're delighted that we're a part of that. And you know, I think for us, the main thing for us working with Visa is that they're creating a really good platform, like this here now today, talking to you to give us more of an opportunity to promote rowing, not just domestically but globally as well. So you know, we're very grateful for them for that, to give us this kind of exposure for the sport.
Well, listen, you've kind of more than earned your exposure for the sport as well. So how has life been then over the last while? I know you were on with Nathan a while back, and in some respects, Paul, life had not changed all that much, even in lockdown. It was a fairly regimented train, eat, sleep, train.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you kind of make it sound a bit boring there, but I thought it was terrific anyway. Just kind of training away there and doing a bit of study on the side, and just being outside there and skibbereen as well, especially during the summertime when the weather is nice. There's no place like it in the world. And usually we're kind of away doing regattas and stuff like this during the summer, so we don't get to fully appreciate it. But yeah, we've been delighted with the past few months and how they've been, and maintaining the fitness as well in the rowing boats, which is important too.
I suspect, Paul, you have no problem enjoying peace and quiet and your own company.
Me? Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's the dream for me. So
he hates it when I'm around. Can't stand my presence, I'd say.
You were quite happy to tell people, Paul, I'd love to come and see you, or I'd love to come to that gathering, but obviously, you know, got to be safe.
Yeah, exactly. You got a fine excuse there. So it was all good.
With regard to the training, Gary, when you get news that the games are going to be delayed a year, is there a benefit in taking time off and doing nothing for a month and maybe allowing the body to recover, or do you keep training? Is that just lost valuable time and lost fitness if you do take a break?
Well, I haven't stopped training at all. I haven't been, and Paul hasn't been training at the same intensity that we would have been in the lead up to the games, because it was pretty intense and it would be hard to sustain that. You know, we had been going at that intensity for a good number of months in the lead up to when the COVID hit, and to sustain that for another 12 months or more leading up to the Tokyo 2021, that would have been very, very difficult. So we've definitely taken it back a little bit, but we're still training away each day. And I think for the most part, you know, like, we don't want to be losing any fitness, so it's important to stay training. And also, we kind of enjoy it. Like, you know, it's there's so much time in the day, and especially these days, there isn't much else to be doing. So there's no harm to sit on the rowing machine in the morning for an hour and a half, or, you know, more lately, you know, we've been able to get on the water. We've been on the river in Skibbereen, and it's just a joy to be out there when the weather's nice. So, I've just been tipping away and doing a bit each day whenever I can.
And Gary, what's intense training versus more relaxed training in terms of hours or in terms of distance?
I guess in intense, like when we're in the height of it, we'd be doing two sessions a day every day. And some days we'd have weights as well. We'd have weights 3 days a week on top of the two other sessions. So you'd be kind of going out in the morning there doing 2 hours of rowing, and then coming back in the evening and doing another 2 hours of rowing and alternating days. Then we do some intense race type efforts. And that's full on, like, you know, you're doing that 6 days a week, and you take maybe a half day Saturday,
yeah,
or a half day Sunday. But no, it's like, you know, if you're doing one training session a day, and then maybe twice, 2 or 3 days a week. So it's a lot easier, and it's a bit more, you know, you're just a bit more relaxed about it. If you feel like you want to take a half day or take a day off, you kind of have that little bit of a luxury that we mightn't have had when we were doing the intense training. So it's a bit more, you got a little bit more autonomy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Paul, I suspect there's probably more technique involved than most of us appreciate. I mean, you lads are pretty self-deprecating and 4 years ago, probably to the day almost, pretty close, but 4 years ago in Rio, you know, you kind of joke, hey, you just pull like dogs at the end and you just, you know, that's all you do. But in terms of technique, are you working on things at this stage? I mean, is the way you're moving your hands, the way you're moving your body constantly evolving over the years, or is it pretty much a technique you get down pretty quickly and stick to?
I'd say we're getting less technical each year. A bit more brute force and ignorance every time we go on.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the technique. It's a bit too kind of artsy or something. Now, this for my liking, I can be a bit subjective at times. I kind of like objective measures of things, but no, it is important. I think, like, even just looking at some of the studies that biomechanics have done on different teams and stuff over the years, that a lot of people, like, from an early age when they've been tested coming into the team, the measures that they can measure with their equipment, and then they try and I suppose the coaches then, say over 5 or 10 years, will be looking at those same athletes and getting them to make adjustments and stuff and improvements into what they see as the ideal, say, force curves and stuff that they can measure. And like, most athletes really find it very difficult to change it a huge amount, even 10 years later. Like, they still kind of general principles of their curves and stuff are much the same, even trying to change it full time over 10 years with full time coaching and stuff. But you can make a little bits of changes and stuff like this, and getting a little bit more to timing together with different people. And
I think a lot of it too, though, when you're really like trying to break barriers and trying to get that bit faster, I mean, we can't do much more training than we do, and a lot of it is just kind of dealing with the boat. So, you know, Paul will be inside in the boat and he might feel something and he mightn't even be able to explain it to me, but he's like, try and do something here, you know, like try and pull your feet or try and flick your hands or something, and you're trying to verbalize what he's feeling, and then sometimes he mightn't even be able to explain it, but if I can latch onto it and get that feel, then you're trying to look for that. And it's a very tricky one to explain. I mean, you can look and do a video analysis and get the coach's opinion and so on, but a lot of what we do is like trying to feel what the other person is doing in the boat, and, you know, different rhythms, different momentums, different parts of the stroke where you change direction and so on. And yeah, it's quite a difficult thing to quantify or explain with words, but there's a lot of quantifiable measures as well that go along with it. But yeah, the real finesse and the real nice stuff, like when you're kind of leading up to a world championship final and the boat is really singing nicely, a lot of that is just like an intuition and a feel that you're going after.
Nice. Okay, very interesting.
When you're going to winter training and most of the training, you're kind of tired a lot of the time, and you're getting tired as the training session's going on, so you're just getting a bit more fatigue, so things start to feel different as well. So it is a bit of a subjective affair. And you see people at regattas and countries, and they're all running at different kind of styles aesthetically. So you just gotta sometimes kind of run with it and hope for the best, but you're kind of always looking to keep the fitness and physiology and strength levels up as well, and always working to improve them too, along with the technique.
Okay, very interesting. So it's not a case of I will watch a race and everyone is rowing in the same way. They'll have their own styles and quirks and physiology, or they may be tired or not tired. And then the way you two talk there about trying to verbalize things to each other, you know, try this with your feet or try that with your rhythm. So there is then, Gary, a real degree of I think you use the word intuition and kind of almost feeling things. Because I would have thought it's robotic. This is the technique. Get your elbows at this angle. Do this, and you keep doing it, and that's how we win. So it's far more reactive than people might think.
To a certain extent, it is. I mean, there is the fundamental movement that we have to get right, and without that, the rhythm and all this sport field doesn't really work. Like one of the great rowers of the world, Olaf Tufte from Norway, gave us a great analogy one time. We were over there training with him, and he was saying, in a crew boat, it's like sitting on a tandem bike. And if you're sitting on a tandem bike with someone, if it's going really slow, you're going to struggle and the balance is going to be off and you mightn't be clipping the pedals right. But if the boat gets up to speed, or if the bike gets up to speed, the bike will just sit there level and you can just generate power with your legs on the pedals. And it's quite similar in a boat. Like, if the boat's going slow and you're trying to figure it out and it's all slow, it's very difficult to find. But when the boat gets up to speed, you can start feeling rhythms a lot better because there's momentum there. There's, you know, I don't know, am I doing a good job of explaining this? But I think when things are going well and when the boat is at speed, it's a lot easier. But say from day to day, if we're just doing like slow paced, long, low intensity training, it can feel awful. because, you know, like a little tiny movement in the space of like a, if you're taking one stroke every 5 seconds or one stroke every 4 seconds, maybe even one stroke every 6 seconds, a small movement is going to be big in that capacity. But if you're doing one stroke every 2 or 3 seconds, things happen a lot faster and the little things don't be as severe, I think.
Yes, you get away with a bit more. And who gets the blame when you're out of rhythm?
Gary, yeah. All the time.
Jesus, Gary, come on.
I carry a lot of weight on my shoulders, Joe. It's not easy.
Can I read
when
something
it goes called... well, then it's all thanks to me, you know, I get it right.
Oh, listen,
it
goes really well. Yeah. No, I get that. I read something about you, Paul, and I want to see if it's true. Don't worry, it's not bad. It was given as one of the reasons that you're so good. The point was made that you have an ability to roll and flatten out his shoulders in a way that most mortals can't. It allows him a broader stroke that generates more power. True or false?
I'm not entirely sure about it. I think that's one of these kind of artsy kind of aspects of the technique that people would be on about. And I don't know, my shoulders kind of sit out a bit longer than Gary's would, but then like people win medals with either kind of style. So it, and I suppose they're kind of far and against both as well. They all might be able to take a longer stroke, but it mightn't be in such a powerful position and this type of thing. So I wouldn't believe what they'd be writing at all, like, to be honest with you. No.
They are right about having weird shoulders.
My shoulders are weird. Shoulders are a mess. That's unquestionable. Yeah.
It's very hard to roll behind them and trying to follow that.
Whether it's good or not remains to be
seen. So sorry, Gary, what did you say about his shoulders? He has weird shoulders.
They're very weird. It's very hard to roll behind him when he does that thing with his shoulders. Like it's like they're gone out of his sockets or something. I think about 12 or 13 years ago there, he fell into a ditch and hurt his shoulder, and it's been kind of wonky ever since. It's difficult
that's
to
the
follow.
Secret. That's the secret. So there's kids in Skibbereen trying to jump into that ditch now, are there?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the kind of weird dilemma, I know you've talked about this load, so we don't have to spend too much time on it, but just to let listeners know, because they may not be aware, as to who's going to row in the Olympics. The general consensus, Paul, is your spot is pretty safe. Obviously, Gary, you're gunning to be alongside him. There's Fintan McCarthy very much in the mix. There's his brother Jake. There's Shane O'Driscoll, who obviously had a big success in 2017. In short, there are four spots there alongside Paul and obviously, or sorry, there's four people gunning for one spot alongside Paul. If only there were four spots, one spot with four looking for them. So that's a tricky scenario. Paul, where does chemistry come into it? Where does Dominic Casey turn into you and saying, when it comes to moments of intuition and you feeling and working well with different partners, where does all that come into this decision?
Provided Paul says number one is the thing anyway.
It's the thing, yeah. We see that, I suppose, first of all, that kind of intuition doesn't usually come into it when you're selecting the boat. It'll just come down to the times and we'll go out there and race all the combinations, and at the end of the day, whoever's got the best time out of all the combinations will be the crew, regardless of how things feel. I mean, if things feel like rubbish and it's the fastest time, then why would you not pick the fastest time?
And it's a simple case of time.
Yeah, it is. And I suppose secondly, my seat in the boat isn't guaranteed at all. It's just that I have kind of maintained it over the past couple of years. It still is up for grabs if someone can come along and beat me out of it. So I better watch my back too.
Interestingly enough, I don't know if this is not enough, but just before COVID there, when we did the testing, myself, Shane, Fintan and Jake have all been closer to Paul than any of us have ever been in any of the previous years. So, you know, it is getting tighter and it's Paul is still number one, but it's getting closer. Like the rest of us are getting closer to that margin, which is good for the whole team as a whole. And it's good for the Olympic lightweight double for Ireland.
Yeah. And are you getting better? Or is he getting worse?
Yeah. We are getting better and Paul is getting worse.
That's so
too much time about that medical stuff.
All that nonsense, yeah.
educating himself in for what?
A weird kind of dynamic, obviously, for obvious reasons, not least because you're your brothers and there's going to be competition, be it healthy or otherwise. It sounds like it's all generally quite healthy. What's it? Well, I mean, was it pretty miserable last year, Gary? missing out. I know there was a bit of injury and it was kind of an interrupted year, but I would suspect you became a man possessed with the Olympics looming.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, in years gone by, I would have looked at athletes who have lost their seats in boats and thought, oh God, it must be awful. I'd hate to be in that position. But when you find yourself in that position, I mean, you just have to get on with it. Like, I'm not in it, and sitting around dwelling on it isn't going to make me any closer to getting into it. So you just kind of think, what can I do? And from one day to the next, and here I go, try and get back in. Like, and obviously, it's not very nice. Like, but yes, you've got to deal with it the best way you can. Like, yeah.
Are the five of you in close contact regularly? Like, are you training pretty much side by side most of the time? Would you see a lot of each other?
We would have done up until the lockdown, yeah. Yeah, like, we'd be there every single day all the time, on training camps together in Spain and so on. But no, not so much. No. We're a bit more independent now, just doing our own thing. We'd still meet up in the rowing club and go on the water together when we can. But it's a bit more independent.
That's great, though. That sounds like it is about as healthy a competition as it can be. Quite a mature attitude to it, because you can imagine those things in other circumstances getting quite tetchy and just difficult for understandable reasons.
Yeah, well, like, it's hard enough. I mean, the training's hard enough, and without adding like a toxicity to the environment, like, that's not going to make anything even any easier. Yes. You know, you're already tired and cranky going out to training, and then if you're not getting on with the fellas around you, it's going to make it life even more difficult. So we try and keep it all above board and happy out and PC, and try and stay friends through it all.
When will the decision be made?
Probably like March, April, like, but just before the racing season kicks off next summer. Yeah, okay. Springtime.
Mm. Okay. Paul, will you have much races in the meantime? How's the schedule looking for y'all?
Yeah, we've got a clear schedule now until next spring, pretty much, just with getting on with training now and that type of stuff. But about every month they have kind of assessments scheduled for the national team. So either just on the water there in Cork, or it's on the rowing machines that we can test ourselves out. So it'll be kind of a bit of that during the year and stuff. And then I think April, yeah, that the international season for next year kicks off.
Okay. It's 4 years ago since Rio. I'm wondering, Paul, what's the strongest memory, you know, from probably this time, give or take 4 years ago? Is it being on the water? Is it doing all the TV interviews? Is it sitting in a room messing with Michael Conlon and having the crack? What's kind of when you think back now, the overall or lingering memory from it?
I've not kind of looked back on it too much yet. You know, I think we're still kind of trying to look forwards for the time being. And be kind of so occupied with that and trying to get on with the day-to-day running things that you're not really thinking about it. But
For me, it was like the excitement of other people, like the people at home. And you'd see like photos, yeah, like when we were over in Rio, you'd see photos online and video clips of all the people around Skibbereen getting excited. And that was really kind of cool to see. I mean, we race all the time. We've been racing all our lives, and you know, we've subsequently won medals internationally and so on. But you know, what was really unique about the Rio experience was all the excitement at home, which we'd never experienced in rowing before. So that was kind of cool. That was a nice memory, I think, to have.
A bit surreal, I would think, as you're looking at each other going, what the hell is happening here?
Yeah, what's going on at home? Yeah. Like, we're just there racing away as we normally would have done. I mean, obviously, you know, like, this is the biggest event and so on, but like, yeah, when you break it down to its fundamentals, it's just we're going racing and we're racing the guys that we've raced before and stuff. And we didn't even win, but everyone was so excited at home. It was kind of cool. Like,
Paul, you're studying medicine. I remember from your chat with Nathan a couple of months back, you mentioned exams August time. Are they done or are they upcoming quickly?
No, I've been done there a week and a half ago now. Right. So, I was pretty delighted actually that UCC there kind of left me sign myself back up, whereas obviously kind of being in the medical profession, they're all up the walls with trying to deal with this COVID stuff, and they could have very well have told me, look, this is your problem now. You just have to tough it out and get on with things then a couple of years down the line. But they didn't do that, and they were kind of organizing placements and stuff like that for me on the side during the summer, and did the autumn exams there now, which should hopefully kind of allow me to get into third year now, starting next week. So pretty grateful for that. And once that kind of happened, then I was kind of delighted that I didn't actually miss out on anything with the postponement of the Olympics either, and things have been going all right. Like,
great. So, what was the focus of the exams this time around?
What was it? I suppose, well, I just kind of two modules too. So one was a general practice exam. So I did a bit of placement for that with Tony Foley in Kinsale. And then there was another, I suppose, hospital-based exam. And I've been to CUH then for a couple of weeks placement as well. And just kind of a couple of questions on that, but they were in a kind of an online format, which was a bit different, but it was good, I think.
And what do we think, mark-wise, first?
Oh. Oh, the full marks, boy.
Oh, full marks.
Full marks.
why medicine? What attracted you to medicine? What are you hoping to do, or do you know yet in terms of this broad area?
I kind of ask myself that sometimes, so I got stuck in there. I didn't know what I wanted to do leaving school, to be honest. And so I kind of knew I was interested in sports and this type of thing. And I ended up doing physiotherapy in UCD and thinking going down the sports route. But I kind of realized then that I just more enjoyed taking part in sports rather than kind of being on the side. And during the physio, then we had to do a load of clinical placements in hospitals. And I just really enjoyed that aspect of things. And we were sent into the theatre one day just to see what the patients go through in surgery and understand why they're in so much pain and stuff afterwards when they'd be doing their rehab. I just thought that was like the coolest thing in the world. And that kind of set me off then to go back and study this. So I think probably the goal afterwards is to try and go down the line of surgery.
There's this one really old rowing guy there. He used to be on the Irish team a few years ago, Sam Lynch. He's a three-time world champion and he's been to a few Olympics. And Paul has like systematically been taking down Sam's records in Irish rowing, you know, winning more world titles, beating him on the rowing machine, setting better scores and all these kind of things. And Sam's also a doctor, so we're certain that Paul's trying to like go into this profession to be better than Sam at that as well.
Leave him something, for God's sake.
For Sam.
It's not that way at all, but I think Sam was good as well to me because his wife, Sinead, was on the rowing team for the Rio Olympics, and so he moved to Cork, and he was just kind of good at giving me advice on getting into medicine and this type of thing as well. So,
Right. Yeah,
he's a good lad.
Fair play to you, amazing. I mean, I would think people go two ways when they walk into surgery. They either faint or they think it's the coolest thing ever. I know which camp I'm in, so That's amazing. That'll take a fair couple of years to get cracking at a surgeon, I would think, no?
I think so, yeah. So I've kind of two more years of school left to do and an intern year. And I think the training schemes are 7 or 8 years in after that and fellowships and all this kind of stuff. So Sam's still not fully qualified yet and he's about 50 now by this stage. So I'm a long ways ahead. Jeez, what's the panic?
Olympian world champion surgeon. Thanks. Leave us something, for God's sake. Gary, what about you? What are you interested in doing when all this rowing business is done?
Oh, man, I don't know. thankfully, I don't have to deal with that for another year now.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I don't have much of a plan. I'm kind of easy going about it. I'd like to do some traveling, maybe get a job, maybe take a holiday or something. I'm not really sure. Let's try and build a house in Skibbereen or something. I'd like to live down there. But I don't have anything set in stone, really. Just trying to deal with the rowing at the minute. And then
you boys are both kind of... Yeah, you lads are both kind of, what, 27, 26 territory. Will you get another games after Tokyo? I mean, all going well. Do rowers peak young, Gary, or can you see lads in their
mid-to-late
30s?
Yeah, ideally, like we could row until we're into our 40s.
Right.
We could, yeah, like there's rowers out there that, sorry, there, I noticed something popping up on the screen here.
You're all right.
There we go. Like rowers who row up into their 40s, their early 40s, and I think you kind of peak around the age of 30 or so.
Late 20s, early 30s,
but then you kind of plateau it in for the next 10 years. And more often than not, I think why people quit rowing, or not even quit, but why they don't stay at an international level is because like it's not a professional sport, so generally people's lives kind of start getting in the way. People need to start paying mortgages and they have families and so on, and then rowing just isn't a suitable lifestyle for that. But some athletes, they do manage to pull it off. I guess they get some very forgiving wives or partners or whatever it is. And so we could row until we're 40, but the big problem for us is that they're getting rid of the lightweight double from the Olympic program after this Olympics. So we probably won't be able to keep rowing at the Olympics kind of a thing, in this event anyway. The next option would probably be to go racing heavyweight, and whether that's a viable option or not, we're not really sure. We haven't really tried it out. But it's something to consider that. Anyway.
Yeah. Why are they getting rid of it?
Is it the way that the Olympic people don't see a need for lightweight?
Yeah, I think they want to get rid of weight category events across all sports.
Except for combat sports.
Yeah.
It? Yeah.
I think is their thinking. And they're saying that the times of in the lightweight rowing, that the times are kind of pretty close to the heavyweight, that there's not much point having the two categories.
Okay. And when we say lightweight and heavyweight, does that apply to the rowers or the weight of the boat?
The rowers, the athletes,
Okay. Yeah. So you'd be going in against bigger athletes, potentially stronger, faster. So
big fellas,
that's the question mark.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. I mean, some of our times have been pretty good. You know, we could be quite competitive. Our lightweight double has gone as fast as heavyweight doubles, but I guess, you know, the consistency, like, can you do it consistently over time when it really comes to the pinch and the really big fast race? Like, these guys are much bigger, they have longer limbs, they've got bigger strokes, more watts to generate and so on. And so is it doable? We don't know.
I suppose it's still only speculation as well over whether they're getting rid of it or not.
It hasn't been confirmed officially,
really.
Right,
but it's something to consider. But like in an ideal world, we'd be tipping away there, rowing away until they're 40, maybe longer. I'd drag it out as long as I could if I wanted.
Keep dragging it out. Absolutely. A last point I was going to say, I thought that when you were saying how people stop, I thought you might suggest that almost just appetite goes and maybe a degree of boredom goes, because even listening to your schedule, there's no shortcut, it seems, to getting fit. You know, this is not like a skill sport where you can kind of maybe ease off a touch. You still have to get out there every morning and put in the hours. And I could see over time you get into your mid-30s how that could become a little bit
back. I think that can happen as well to people, but I think for the most part it is the way that there isn't the money there for people to live comfortably and have families. And you know, it's nice when you're in college and you're young and you don't have a lot of overheads and stuff, and you know, like we're our own men here now, so we can kind of do what we like when we like, and we don't have too many demands coming at us. But you know, as life goes on, things will become a little bit more challenging to sustain this lifestyle, and that's generally the case the world over, because it's just the nature of amateur sport, I guess.
Sure is. Are you listening to music when you're out in the water, or is it you need to be talking to each other in town?
No, not in the water. No, there isn't much talking either. Like,
no, you wouldn't have to talk to each other, but I suppose you just have to be aware of your surroundings as well, especially out in the water, because you're going backwards, and so you can't see where you're going. So
and you have to bear in mind the other crews on the water are going backwards and they can't see where they're going, so it can be a recipe for disaster. You're very aware of what's going on around you.
You've painted the picture there. Lads, thanks so much for the time. Obviously, you were speaking to us as part of Team Visa in Ireland, who've extended their commitment to 90-plus Team Visa athletes and offering them the opportunity to extend their relationship with Visa through to 2021, which is obviously great given the postponement of the Games. Paul, Gary O'Donovan, as ever, fellas, great to have you on. Keep it going. We'll talk to you again.
Brilliant. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks very much.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.